You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs, with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 80 of Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. I'm delighted to welcome Caitlin along, and we are going to chat about your daughter and her Hirschsprungs condition and I guess her story so far and a few other topics that we'll bring up as well. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you.
No problem at all. Thank you so much for coming on. And as we mentioned, that you have a daughter who has Hirschsprungs disease. And I know you wanted to go through various different parts of her story, a little bit about some resources, diet, a little bit about the surgery as well. But I guess if we start from the beginning, probably the easiest place to start with her story.
So when Isabella was born, she didn't pass her first stool, and she was throwing up a lot, and I had no idea what was going on. I just thought this was normal baby things that she was experiencing. So the doctor came in there and said they needed to run some tests, and they took her, and they came back in the room and they didn't have her with them, and I was just so confused about, where's my baby at? The next time that I saw her, she was connected to a bunch of wires and tubes and stuff. And they told me that they had to rush her to the NICU, which was about an hour away from the hospital that I had originally had her at. So I was only 21 at the time, and I didn't know what to do other than call my mother, obviously, and ask her, give her all the information that I had. She went straight to Google, of course, and everything that came up on Google was just not very informative. It was more jump into the worst case scenario. And so that made me panic even more. And I had to come home without her. And that was very traumatic, like we talked about that word, traumatic. And then she spent the next 2 weeks in the NICU, and they had to do biopsies. They figured out that she did have Hirschsprungs, but they had to pull up the colostomy. So she had a colostomy for the first 3 months, and then they went in and did her reversal surgery at 3 months old. Everything, life since then has been very difficult. We've had to deal with dilations and irrigations and being sick with enterocolitis quite a bit. A whole bunch of hospital stays. And now we're at a point to, she's 5 years old now, and she isn't really eating very well. Not really at all, actually. And she's having trouble going to the bathroom. So we've been doing her enemas or flushes. Not quite sure the word to use there.
Yeah, sounds right to me.
Yeah, so we do her flushes every night, but they are saying that we're not getting out enough that way, so they might need to do us a cost. So now, as we're speaking, we're currently in the hospital waiting for a colonoscopy and a colonic manometry, and that should tell us about the motility function in her colon, and it should tell us that if she's able to get that cystectomy or not, and if she might need that surgery again, in case that there's still some missing nerve cells in the colon.
Right, so they're still looking for missing or ganglion cells, missing nerve cells then.
Right.
So with that, the missing ganglion cells, were you told what type of Hirschsprungs she has in terms of whether it's long or short?
So I'm pretty sure that it is long segment. I'm not quite sure just because of, like we've talked about, there's just so many different doctors and, you know, kiddos with this. It's just different for everybody, and they don't really give you the adequate information that I would say. They don't sit you down and completely explain to you what you're going through specifically just because it is so, like, diverse.
Yeah, that is. I know we mentioned a little bit before we started recording that it is, it would be so much easier if it was a one size fits all approach, but it just isn't. So I guess, and this is, this is whatever country you're in, wherever hospital you're in, they do sometimes have to talk in could and possibly and maybe because everybody is different. And everybody's body, if that makes sense, will react in a certain different way. Obviously, the Hirschsprung itself is more sort of categorized between how much are you missing, and then that sort of determines what Hirschsprungs you have. But I guess in terms of the long segment, she will need a stoma. Or has had does have a stoma for that. In terms of stoma care, how tricky was that for you?
So she only had the stoma for 3 months. Thankfully, they reversed it and she doesn't have it anymore. So while we were doing that, everybody suggested doing the bags, obviously putting a bag over the colostomy. But because she was a newborn and I just didn't feel comfortable using the bag and the adhesive and all of that. So what I did was I just put A&D ointment around the stoma and then I wrapped it with gauze a couple times. And then put her diaper over it, and that's how we did it. So she didn't even have to wear the bag.
That's quite clever. I quite like
Yeah,
that. That's a really
the
cool
doctors
idea.
were yeah the doctors were very like, what is this? Like they were like, wow, I can't believe you found another way to do this. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, it's and again, it's like we said before, it's trial and error, isn't it? It's kind of saying right, because a lot of the bags, and a lot of the people I speak to who, I mean, even the companies that make bags. Find it very, very difficult, especially if you have a small baby or small child, that you get given adult bags. I mean, it just doesn't work. So, trying to find something where you can stop the leaks or you can find something that works is brilliant. But I think it's. That's again, it's trial and error, isn't it? It's trial and error, and it becomes quite a tricky one. So in terms of the reversal at 3 months, was that post pull through?
That so they did it all at once.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they did the pull through and they closed up the
Lovely. And how has life been sort of without the
stoma.
stoma? Is that better or is that sort of trickier?
Well, obviously the stoma really it was really scary, seeing her intestine on the outside. That was very scary for me. But honestly think that those first 3 months when she had it, she did the best out of her whole life because she had no issue at all. She was, drinking breast milk, not spitting it up, and not crying as much after she had her pull through surgery. The entire time that she was a baby, she screamed. And I mean, this is not like just baby crying or colic or anything like that. She screamed because she was clearly in pain and she had to be held a certain way. Like it really affects the parents mentally as well, having to deal with that because obviously you don't want to get frustrated, but hearing constant screaming and then trying to manage everything, it's a lot.
Yeah, and I think that's something that I'm at pains to say as well is that yes, obviously your number one priority is your child, but the parent shouldn't be neglected either in terms of their feelings and their thoughts because as we've mentioned, off air, the trauma is very real when it comes to having a child with a rare condition, an invasive condition, a long-term condition, that kind of trauma is very much real. And I think I know you wanted to talk a little bit about that as well. And it the words trauma and traumatic PTSD are very overused just in general life. But I think those kind of feelings are absolutely the things that a lot of parents with Hirschsprung's children do go through.
Yeah. And another thing is that obviously I feel like mothers in general who experience postpartum depression, at least in my area, we're over here in America, I don't feel like we have that much resources for postpartum and we don't have the support that we really need. But when it comes to being a medically complex mother, that is like PTSD postpartum times 10. Like, it doesn't even touch it. It really does mess with you a little bit, having to see your child suffer.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, I think anybody listening to this podcast, and I know I do have a lot of mothers that listen to this podcast, a lot of mothers with Hirschsprung's children that listen, that will totally understand what you're saying in terms of that, those feelings of depression, of having to see your child go through, I mean, having to see your child go through any surgery is difficult. But we know with Hirschsprung's that there's going to be, I mean, at least one surgery, more than likely multiple surgeries, and having to do that, you know, over and over again, especially with, you know, long segment obviously being a little bit more severe, must be incredibly, incredibly tough. I mean, how did you get through those moments?
Well, I'm gonna be completely honest with you. I did not have much support, like I was telling you. So I struggled a lot with addiction during that time. But here recently, and I know that religion is a touchy subject as well, but I have gave everything to God, and that is how I've got through this. That is literally the only way I can tell you. He has carried me through it. He has kept me sober. He has gave me the knowledge that I needed to be able to tell the doctors what they need to do, because I know we also talked about that as well, where the doctors will tell you, well, you're the parent and you know your child, so you bring them in when you feel like you need to. But then when you're telling them what they need to do, what you've learned, because you're putting your research into this specific disease, whereas they have their knowledge of all kinds of things. So they're not studying this specific thing like you are. So, but then they'll tell you that you don't know what you're talking about. So that's very frustrating as well.
Yes, very. And I know we mentioned a little bit about mother's instincts, and we'll get onto that in a second. But you're right. You know, as a doctor, as a nurse, as a medical professional, you have to know so much about so many different conditions. You know, you don't have, you know, nobody has the brain capacity to know everything about every rare condition. You know, you that's why you have specialists in Hirschsprung, specialists in other types of rare conditions, because nobody can know absolutely everything about everything. They just can't. So I would always advocate for people to do their own research as well. I think that's so, so important. It's not to necessarily say, you know, not believe doctors and nurses, because of course they're incredibly highly skilled and highly trained, but add that to your own research. I would always advocate for that. So I would always advocate for people doing their own research. I just think it's incredibly important, and you have done your own research as well.
Yes, for sure. And I do want to say this. I know that it's very touchy about like AI and TikTok and things like that. And obviously you can't believe everything that you find on the internet, but I am very thankful that we do have those things now, because if I would have had TikTok and like ChatGPT and things like that back when she was a baby, it would have made it so much easier, because that's where I get a lot of my information now. And it's like, wow, I really needed this back then.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it's really hard for back in the past up until this point for parents, like how we feel now, like we don't have the information. I'm sure it was so much harder for parents up until this point, to where we did have all this access to go do our own research.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think of my own parents, you know, 30 odd years ago, without that information. And I mean, internet, even, you know, 90s, that would have been early 90s. I mean, the internet wasn't really a thing in the early 90s. I mean, how you got your information, I'd no idea. No idea. I mean, you know, you can't exactly go to the library, and I can't imagine there's many books on Hirschsprung's in the library. So, yeah, I mean, and you're right when you say, yes, obviously you've got to be aware of what you see and what you read. And the social media is, it's everything, isn't it? It's the good, It's the very best and it's the very worst and it's everything in between. So
Yes.
so long as you pick the right things at the right time, you will learn a heck of a lot. I mean, and I'm the same. The amount of people that I've met through TikTok, through Instagram, through Facebook. I mean, I wouldn't have this podcast if I didn't have social media. It's how I get, 95% of my guests. But there are so many, especially in terms of things like stoma care, right? I'd see so many videos on people just posting, not saying you have to do this or you have to do that, but just, this is what we do and this is what works for me. And I think those are really, really helpful. And I think something like that would have been really beneficial for my parents.
Yeah, and just like what you've started here, like this is what's important is everybody getting together and talking about experiences. That way you can apply these things that you're learning to your specific situation. And you're not just depending on what you see. You're listening to real life stories and talking to people that it really feels so lonely because we know that this is a rare disease and you don't really know that many people. At least I don't. I don't know anybody else. Other than you talking with you, I don't know anyone else who has this disease, so I feel very lonely in this.
Yeah, and I think that sense of community is so, so important. Also, it's the other reason why I started this because I'd never met anybody with this. And to be honest, even when I started this, I still didn't know. I didn't know if I'd, I just typed Hirschsprungs into Instagram. That's all I did, and just see who I found. There was no process to it really. And I've been lucky enough to find so many wonderful people just through social media. And I would always advocate to use social media, in order to build a community, because it is the best way, and it is the best modern way of doing it, in my opinion. And that sense of not being alone, I think is something that really resonates with a lot of people, because as you said, as I talk to you now, you're in hospital doing this podcast episode. And I guess that can feel very much on your own.
Yeah, it definitely. And now I can say, and I know that we touched on like mothers of children with this, but I can't imagine how it is for the fathers who have to keep it together for not just the child, but for the mother, because I know that my husband struggles with this a lot, but he doesn't communicate it like I do because we're more emotional creatures, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, people who've sort of flicked through my episodes will see that it's probably about 85% female.
Yeah, so I can only imagine how it is for the fathers.
Yeah, and that's one thing I do want to have more of. I want more fathers to come on, and talk about, because yes, I know that in a lot of cases the mothers are there all the time. That they will know more because they're there all the time. And but it's not to take away from the father's thoughts and feelings.
Yeah,
And it
because they're
can.
still the one having, I'm pretty sure that he would rather be here with me than having to be there providing for us, having to go to work. And I'm sure that he is emotional, but he's having to work, so he can't express it like I can just sit here and just cry about it if I need to.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I think that is important that the emotions of both parents are taken into consideration. And like you said, sometimes you have to just, I mean, in his case, as you've just said, he's off to work. He can't then just sort of emotionally, go all over wherever. But it's, yeah, I think it's an important subject. I think it's a really important subject that, because like we talked about before, you've both been through a similar experience. You've both been through that sort of medical traumatic experience. So I think, yeah, both mothers' and fathers' thoughts and feelings are equally valid.
I feel like us as mothers, we don't really think about how much it affects them just because the baby was taken out of our body and away from us, but it's still their baby too.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, totally, totally agree with that. And it's also about, and again, it's about everyone's thoughts and feelings, isn't it? Because I guess as a mother, your first thoughts are with your daughter and going, are they okay? You know, what do they need? How can I support them? And then often the mothers get lost in their thoughts and their needs and their feelings because you're just as important. You know, you need somebody there to take care of those thoughts and feelings as well. So I would always, yeah, I'd always look at the larger picture of making sure that everybody's supported, I guess.
Yeah, along with the siblings, I feel like that's not really talked about as well. My daughter has a little brother and an older sister. I mean, sorry, that was backwards. An older brother and a little sister. She is the middle child. And I know that my oldest, and probably the youngest too, struggles with feeling like she gets more attention because she's medically complex and she's in the hospital and stuff. And I had to explain that to him, that while yes, she does get more of my attention because of that, it doesn't make him less than, and he doesn't want to be the one actually having to experience all of this pain, and for him to just kind of have grace and understanding that she's going through a lot. But he also is too, because he has to be away from his mama when I'm having to come to the hospital.
Yeah.
And all that. So it really does affect the siblings as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And again, it's something that gets completely lost, and something that I probably don't talk about enough on here, about siblings and, you know, what they must feel, because see, their, you know, brother or sister is in hospital, they're away from them, you know, they don't know necessarily what is going on. Yeah, you know, and that you know, it is going to be a difficult thing as well, and they'll obviously need the right support. And it's obviously, it's not just their brother sister being away from it. Often, you know, the mother father are away as well. So yeah, that, I think you're absolutely right. That's a really good point you make. Really good point. And I guess on that as well, in terms of, we talked a little bit about resources and about trying to find resources when you had the original diagnosis. How tricky was that to find resources?
Yes. Yeah, so, like we said, they don't really explain everything to you right off the bat because they don't really know how it's going to affect every person. But with this, I've had to become a nurse, and I know that you are as a mother anyway when your kids get sick, but this is so much more complex. I feel like I should have had training for the things that I have to do for her. So there's that. Like I have had to look up any resources that I need. Do I need training for this? I need to figure it out myself because it has not been provided to me. They have not told me about this. And then not only that, but now, so I can't work and she can't go to school. So I'm going to have to be a teacher. I'm going to have to homeschool her at home. But then how am I going to get this extra money to provide for my family since I can't go to work? So obviously there is disability that you can get on, but that it's so looked down on by people. People in this area make you feel very low, I guess, for having to file for disability or something like that. They don't make it seem like what it's really there for. They kind of just act like it's more of a handout that you're reaching for instead of actual assistance that you need.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it's there for. The situation you've described, where you have a child with a long-term condition, you can't go out to work because you have to look after, you know, you can't just leave your daughter completely alone. It doesn't, you know. Yeah, that is a real shame that it's looked down upon. Because
at least in this area, for sure.
Yeah. No, I'm sure there are other areas that have that as well, and that is a shame, because that's not that's not, you, if you're using for it what it's exactly you or there to be used for, there should be no prejudice at all.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Right. And then when it comes to therapies that she's needed, the doctors didn't say she's going to need physical therapy for her core strength. She's going to need feeding therapy to help her know what to eat or to even be able to eat, all these things. So I've had to be the one to reach out and be like, hi, is there anything that I can do for her for this? Is there any therapy I can get her signed up for? And they're like, oh, yeah, we can do this. And I'm just kind of like, well, why wasn't this offered? Because what if I didn't even know and she went all this time without it and because I didn't know that it was available?
Yeah, but it's like you said before, you do end up having to be the advocate. And the, you know, as we mentioned, it's so important to do your own research as well. And you do end up having to be the advocate. And that's, and that, I guess... Yeah, I know you said it probably did should have been, offered to you. But it, yeah, you do end up having to do your own research and your own support and this, that, the other. And it's something I'd always always think is necessary. But yeah, no, you're right. It should have been something that should be there already. Okay, we have this. This is what they might need, and that sort of step process, I guess.
Yeah.
I know there was another topic you wanted to discuss, which was diet, which is can be, a real minefield for Hirschsprung's children for obvious reasons, being a stomach condition. But then there are people that I've met who just eat what they want, always have done. And everything's fine. So it is very changeable as well. I've seen there are some people I meet who have issues with things when they're younger and then are fine when they're older. But in terms of diet, how has that gone for your daughter?
So we have had nutritionists come into our GI to try to give us some guidance on that. But the one thing that I have learned that I feel like that everyone should know with this condition that I didn't know until previously, which would have been very helpful this whole time of knowing, is that at least for her, where they took out the intestine that was affected by this, when certain food goes into the colon, a lot of it will just sit there. If it's not something that she can digest or that she's supposed to have, it'll just sit there and collect bacteria and turn into that infection that she kept getting. So this whole time I thought she was just getting these infections randomly when it could have had something to do with the food that I was giving her, she couldn't tolerate it. She couldn't process it in her stomach because it works differently than anybody else's. And they said that she, when she uses the bathroom, it's never going to be formed like everybody else's is formed. It's always going to be more liquid or swirly. So it's just the food that you're giving them, you have to realize what they can process and what they can't. Because if it's the, I'm sorry, I'm getting mixed up here. You want to pause it? I'm sorry. I'm trying to get my words right here. Like the unprocessed foods or the bad foods that we're not supposed to eat. Hirschsprung's kids cannot tolerate it at all. Like hot dogs and these chicken nuggets and stuff like that. She can't process it at all. It'll just sit there and turn it into that infection. So the diet is very important on figuring out what she can eat so that it can pass through correctly and doesn't sit there and turn into an infection.
Yes. Yeah, and that's something that I guess you've just had to learn as you go in more of a sort of trial and error form.
Yes, and then, like I said, the GI had mentioned that to me here recently. So I didn't know this all this time, so I feel like other parents need to know that so that they can maybe avoid infection, because it really is all about the diet. It's all about what they're able to tolerate.
Absolutely. No, that's an excellent tip. Because again, it's something that we probably think about as Hirschsprung's people, as Hirschsprung's parents. And we think, actually, we know diet is important, obviously. But just how important, I think, is, again, depends on the child, depends on the person, depends on the type of Hirschsprungs. I imagine there's all sorts of caveats all over the place when it comes to diet. But I think that is a really important point you make, because it's something, again, we think about the pain levels, we think about if the tummy's distended, we think about all these types of things when it comes to Hirschsprungs, and probably diet isn't necessarily something that, or it's probably quite low down on the list, or can be quite low down on the list, I would imagine.
Yeah, when it should be there at the top.
Yeah, for sure.
Because anytime that she's given sugar, and you know, as a parent, you want to be able to give your kids a tasty treat, but sugar will also cause that infection. It makes her very sick, and I had to learn that with trial and error as well. Wow. So what we do, and I know... what we do is we have a shake that she's supposed to have because she's not eating. She doesn't have an appetite. So we have a shake that we make into a smoothie, and then we put it into a popsicle. We make it into a popsicle, and then she's able to eat it like that. And that is the only thing that doesn't tear her stomach up.
Wow. That's a good idea, actually.
They say to give high fiber foods, which obviously yes, but you also have to keep in consideration how much gas that's going to cause. And gas causes them extreme pain.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at UKHealthRadio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the Skin Comfort Formula online and in stores now.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is. It's like you said, it's trial and error. And but that's a really good idea. If anybody is, you know, struggling with that, then have a listen to that, because that's making it into a popsicle is, yeah, it's something I've never come across that before. So I think that's a really, really good idea. And you're right with the high fiber, because like I was told constantly throughout my childhood, having a high fiber diet was something that's really, really important. But with everything you put in, there is going to be some sort of reaction as well. So I guess as well, the other question I want to ask is that, yes, it's trial and error, but I guess also it becomes like a balancing act as well.
Yes, definitely. And I think, and just one more thing I want to touch on, I'm sorry this is all over the place, but with the doctors not really knowing what to really do for this situation, I've been told a lot of the time that I basically have to wait until she is in critical condition for them to do anything. So I'll be sitting here calling them saying, you know, she's not eating, she's not pooping, like something's wrong. How am I going to get nutrition into her body? And they say, well, if she's not dehydrated, then it's fine. So they want to wait until she's dehydrated or she has a blockage in her intestines or anything like that to do anything. They send us straight to the emergency room, but they're only trained for emergencies.
Yeah.
So I don't like that we kind of have to wait until they're in critical condition to do anything other than wait months and months and months for procedures like what we're doing right now.
Yeah. I mean, that's peculiar. I mean, I'm with you on that. That doesn't sound very healthy. Do they say why?
I really believe that it's just the area that I'm in. Okay. Because I'm trying to get sent to a different children's hospital for more studies. Yeah. So in America, they have a specific hospital that has doctors who are trained specifically for Hirschsprung's disease, and that's what I'm trying to go to. I think that's another good piece of advice is with this, you don't need to have just a typical GI. You need a motility specialist. You need somebody who has dealt with Hirschsprung's because it is so rare. So we're not dealing with just a simple GI issue.
No, it's when people try and tell me, or they message me and they go, oh, well, you know, it's the same as IBS, isn't it? Like, no, absolutely not. Or it's the same as IBD. No, not a chance. So it's way, way more complex than that. And it has a lot more moving parts. Like you said, you don't just need that one specialist. You do need a handful, at least, I guess.
Yes, for sure.
So in terms of that sort of specialist hospital, what can they provide? Can they provide the specialists rather than where you're at now?
So where I'm at now, they only wanted to do the colonoscopy and the colonic manometry, and then they'll move on to doing other things after this study. But for the Children's Hospital in Cincinnati, over here in America, they were wanting us to come to do this exact same thing, but they were also going to go ahead and take a biopsy to see if she still had the affected nerves, to go ahead and get everything done while she's under in one go, instead of dragging this out. Because that's kind of how it is at this point. They told me, we're going to check the motility, and if we suspect that there's damaged nerves, then we'll do a biopsy. And I'm just like, so we're just kind of having to let her suffer longer than need be.
Yeah, and that's the difficult thing with the biopsy. Again, talking to a lot of people as I do, people are very hesitant to do the biopsy, and you can't... can understand why to a certain extent, because it is very invasive, and it is, you know, it is something that's they try and do as a almost last resort, I guess. But that is difficult because, I mean, you know, she has Hirschsprungs. You know, it's not like we're testing for when we're testing for Hirschsprungs. You know, she has. It's just, I guess, trying to find out how much of the colon's affected.
Yeah, if there's still any affected after that first surgery.
Absolutely. And if we just sort of touch on, just while we've got sort of 5 or 10 minutes, the condition itself, I know you wanted to mention a little bit just on its invasiveness, because it is, and that, again, there's no way of getting around it, really, in terms of some of the procedures you have to go through, the surgeries you have to go through. What are your sort of thoughts on that?
So for me, I went through things whenever I was a child that makes this difficult to deal with in ways you could probably imagine. So doing the dilations and the irrigations, just having to, mess with her in an area that probably isn't comfortable for her. That's what I feel like is mostly invasive. And so her father is the one who has to do this for her. And just imagine how that is for a little girl to have to have her dad do something like that, and imagine how hard it is for him to have to be the one to do it, because it's very uncomfortable for him as well.
Absolutely, yeah, and I guess I think that's another thing that is a tricky one to process if you're not Hirschsprung's parent, or you don't have to do something similar to that, to try and get that across. How, again, when you're talking about things like dilations, when you talk about things like enemas and washouts and all of those things, they are very invasive. And what's probably not known as much is, as we said before, the traumatic side of it, and the sort of mental after effect of that.
Right.
And I think it's just not as much information out there about it, or people potentially willing to come forward and talk about it.
Yeah, because it's very uncomfortable to talk about. It
Oh,
really
hugely.
is.
Yeah, hugely. And again, don't blame anyone for not wanting to talk about it, or almost sort of blocking that out of their mind. But that is, and I think, is that somewhere sort of down the line you think probably needs support for that as well?
Yes, for sure. And that's why we've already started therapy now, because I know that it's going to affect her in the long run. Because she's already having like feelings within herself, not feeling like she is like everybody else.
That's a tricky one. Yeah, that's a tricky one, because in a lot of ways, we are like everybody else in terms of, you know, if you looked at us, I say us as in Hirschsprung's people, Hirschsprung's patients, if you looked at us, we are totally normal. You know, you can't see someone in the street and go, "That's a Hirschsprung's person." You know,
Right.
it doesn't, it's not, you can't. You know, it's not like you've got a broken leg, or, you know, or broken arm, or whatever. You can't point someone out and say that's a Hirschsprung's person. But a lot of those feelings that we have, I guess, are internal, and that's the really difficult bit, I guess, because they are as important as the person, you know, who has the quote unquote physical disability. I mean, it is a physical condition, obviously, but a lot of those issues are internal. You know, you just don't see them, do
Right, and affect you mentally, for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. And I that's really good though that you are being proactive in terms of saying, okay, this might be an issue down the line, so we're going to get ahead of the situation. And I'd always, yeah, think that's a good thing. I think that's a really, really good thing.
Right. And then just last thing, they also say that, kids are not supposed to have x-rays a lot. With at least with my other kids, I've heard that. Well, we don't want to do x-rays because of the radiation. But with these kids, I mean, they can sometimes get two, three, four x-rays just in a day or two.
Yeah, most definitely. Were you given a reason as to why no x-rays, or is it just the radiation?
Just the radiation exposure.
Yeah. Okay. But again, yeah, it's a difficult one, that. It's a really difficult one. Yeah, most, but then again, if you need it, you need it, don't you? It's
Yeah,
not.
you just kind of have to weigh in the options there.
Absolutely. So it's very much about, I guess one thing we have learned from this is it's balance, it's trial and error, and perseverance as well. And that's something that certainly you seem to have in, and your daughter have in spades, that perseverance to, push through whatever's coming next. Which is, I mean, you need resilience. It's so important.
Yes, definitely.
And just very quickly, just while we've got one more minute, in terms of the future, I know as you talk to me from a hospital room, is the moment is not necessarily the place you want to be. But in terms of the future, how do you see the future?
I see us getting some answers soon, and her being able to eat again without the. There is a possibility of G-tube right now, but we are going to speak into existence that she is not getting a G-tube, that we are going to work with her in feeding therapy, and she's going to eat, and she's going to be able to play outside without getting exhausted. It's going to be okay. Everything's going to be all right.
Absolutely. And I know it goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway, that I wish her the very, very best with that. And really hope that all of those things come true and get rid of the G tube and go and be, quote unquote, do everything that everybody else can do, which is exactly what we want. But I want to say thank you so much, because I know you've been incredibly busy today. Thank you so much for joining me, and I wish you all the very best.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast, or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll bring you another episode soon.